The reason we only stock D'Addario strings is because D'Addario strings are perfect.
When people come in here, they think that we get them for free or something like that, but we don't. We have no other reason except for dependability and tone.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Keys for Premier Guitar. We are in Nashville, Tennessee at the Brooklyn Bowl with my good friends, All Them Witches. Ben, how you doing?
Great to be back here and hanging out with you guys.
It's the third time. Third time we've done a rundown. It's funny. The very first one we did, I think it was Soundcheck, was one of the very first ones I got to do when I moved to town. That's over a decade ago.
Yeah.
So the second one hopefully you guys seen was at the Ryman, and now we're at Brooklyn Bowl. And excited to talk about your gear. I know we've covered some of the stuff that people will hopefully be familiar with, but let's start with this Les Paul that's been, I think, in all three of them, right?
Yes. Yeah, this is home base. This is my favorite guitar, obviously. If you've watched any of these rig rundowns, you know about this guitar. Just a 2010 traditional, but with a bunch of mods. Bone Nut, Tone Pros, Saddle, DiMarzio Super Distortion, and this is a new guy, Ox4, I believe Hot Dwayne, and then a custom poker chip. I don't know if I can say it on YouTube.
Where did you get that?
Matt Hughes from Banker Guitars.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, who makes the Flying V that I'll show you guys. And then I put this on myself. It's a String Butler, and it's made a world of difference with tuning. And I love this guitar so much. It feels great. I tracked almost the entire new album with it, and it just feels like home.
Yeah. So. What do you dig about the Les Paul specifically? I know that you know your projects of Mick Loud, acoustic album, and then El Castillo is probably Tele based, right?
That's all Tele. All the acoustic stuff is this Martin that I have.
But what about the Les Paul that works so well for what you do in
All Them Witches? It was the only guitar that I had and used when the band started. And so that kind of sculpted the sound. And, you know, I love experimenting with other guitars with the band in the studio, but it's like live, you know, this just feels the most comfortable for me. And this guitar in particular has a very, very beefy neck to it. I guess the traditional models, I don't know exactly what the necks were modeled after. But it just feels great because I got big hands and it just feels wonderful. And the guitar is actually weight relieved.
Okay.
So it's not too bad, like, you know, holding it for a 90-minute set.
Yeah, because I was here last night. This is night two. We're filming beforehand. Yep. And you were rocking that thing all night.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Now, what should we know about strings and tunings? I know that typically drop D and C.
So I have switched back to 11s.
Okay.
And using D'Addario NYXL 11s. And
what was the move? What was the impetus?
The 10s, you know, maybe I got stronger, but they were a bit too loose.
Okay.
And especially on the first two strings, because this is down to a C, this is a G. And so I switched to 11s because I had another guitar with 11s on it. For whatever reason, I probably like ran out of 10s and I was like, man, this feels really good. So I just switched all my guitars to 11s that are dropped. But when I'm at home, this guitar is in standard a lot. And sometimes I'll even put 9s on it,
which
is fun. Yeah.
So we've done a rundown not that long ago. I can't think of who we just did it with, but they say that they routinely change strings to kind of keep their mind sharp in terms of how they approach their guitar, because they feel like changing the strings, it keeps them centered in terms of like what they're doing in the moment. Is that a thing you do, or is that just how you're feeling?
I used to never change strings on tour unless they broke. But since I've been trying to get through an entire set just playing one guitar, Hendrix did.
Yeah.
Jimmy Page did. Like all those classic dudes would play the whole show just one guitar. And you know, you see a band like Wilco, which I love, my favorite band ever.
Really?
You know, it's like every song their tech has given them a new guitar. And it's like, I can't get connected with an instrument. So anyway, I'm changing strings now every two shows.
Okay.
And it's probably not a way that like helps me approach it, like you're saying, but it's more peace of mind.
Gotcha.
Like, I know I'm not going to break a string.
I guess I didn't phrase that question well enough. It's like specific to gauges. Are you exploring different gauges, like in terms of like trying to like muscle memory or trying to?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, getting used to 11s again was a trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, Telecasters always has 9s, sometimes 8s, and that, you know, I feel like when you go lighter, or actually the string thickness does kind of change the way that you do play. So yes, to answer your question, you know, I'm doing more spanky stuff with 9s and 8s, and I'm doing more riffs and like hammer-ons with the 11s. So.
And I'm sure maybe you even have a more conscious way you attack or bend the note, because like with an 8 or 9, you're not, you can't. Yeah, with like 11s, you can kind of get careless.
Yeah, yeah. We have a song called Enemy of My Enemy, and there's a solo in it early on in the song.
Let's hear it.
And normally I would bend it, you know, pointer finger 10 and then ring finger 12. But since they're 11s, I'm actually doing the bend on the 13th fret. So it's like... It's just... Less work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I imagine, yeah, with those strings. But to nail down tunings, what do you guys typically, are you drop C?
Yes, drop C, probably half of this, or probably 60% of the set. And then D standard.
Okay. Have you ever varied off those, like in terms of like a slight change in one of the strings on a drop C or D standard, like in terms of like just kind of having a different open tuning or approach? Or...
Yeah, I mean, we still bust out a couple of Dying Surfer tunes, which is in the DAC, GAE tuning, and that's really fun. In the studio, sometimes I'll do standard tuning, like on Emma going up on the Telecaster was in standard tuning.
Okay.
But yeah, it's mainly D standard and then drop C.
Okay. Well, to keep things moving, should we have Ronnie bring out some guitars?
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at the, I think, the Banker?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah, so my buddy Matt Hughes, who's actually dropping off a Les Paul for me to check out tonight.
Oh, wow.
He is with Banker Guitars, and he made this V for me a couple years ago. I saw a picture of Jim James from my morning jacket playing a flying V that looked just like this, and I always wanted to copy it. And it's awesome. This guitar is incredible. This stays in D standard.
Okay.
So it's like sometimes when I want to, you know, like sometimes I'll just play this guitar for like the whole set.
It's a statement.
This is a freaking blues guitar. I use it on Slide on the new album, and it's really good. It's killer.
One of my favorite Ryman memories is when you guys played that kind of series of shows.
Yeah.
And during one of the, I can't remember what night, you came out with the Michael Myers mask behind me with the Bankers and did Everest.
Oh, yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, this thing slays. It's got a really good mid-range. Not a lot of low end. I mean, look at the body here.
Yeah.
But it sounds really, really good. It's has, the pickups are a lot more quiet than the ones in the Les Paul.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure that's super distortion.
I like to keep this one in standard for the bluesier stuff since it is a lower output guitar, and then this is like my full-on metal riff.
And then what's this guy?
So that is my Martin acoustic. I don't play it with Witches live, but on this tour we're with King Buffalo, and I'm playing Morning Song with them to close out their set, and I played acoustic on their record.
Because you produced it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But mainly just wanted to sneak in and play guitar. And this is what I used. I used this guitar on probably 80% of the acoustic album that I have.
Yeah, you check that out. I know it's for sale on Bandcamp. That's where I got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What made you do that? Not to do a sidebar too far into it, but like, what made you want to go there?
I've always been a big fan of, you know, John Fahey and Jack Rose. And then actually this dude, Joey Allred, who's probably my favorite instrumental acoustic player. I've always just wanted to kind of copy what those guys are doing and have done. And I wanted to just have a cool open tuning, like finger picking, American Primitive style album. And I did.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful work, man.
A lot of it was recorded on cassette.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's fun.
Now, is he related to Mikey?
Yes.
So who's produced a couple of your records?
Yeah, check out Joseph Allred.
Cool, man.
Very awesome player. And then the third electric that I bring on the road is always going to be a Nags. This one predominantly has been in the Dying Surfer tuning because we play a couple songs on this tour. Like we're doing Talisman a lot. And then I'll also play it for Dirt Preachers, which I recorded in the DAC GAE tuning. This is the Nags Honga, and I've had this thing. I mean, this was on the second rig rundown.
Yeah.
And this guitar rules. This was the guitar I recorded Everest with at Abbey Road. And it feels so good. It's extremely light. And, we also do Cowboy Kirk sometimes, which is in that tuning. And, this guitar is so much fun to play. This is one that I'll never give back to Joe. I'm sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to the amp, because I know normally, which we got here, old standby, the twin with the master.
Yep, that one's just ready to go. It's I have a very easy switchable access from this DI out thing, which I guess I'll explain in a little bit, but it can go into the twin.
Got it.
If the orange head fails. But I have my trusty Holy Grail pedal on the side of the cab.
Is that in the effects loop or?
No. So there's no effects loop on this amp. It's just like the Holy Grail, you know, goes from the pedal board into the Grail and then a short like 1 foot cable into the amp. And I took the Grail off the board because I wasn't touching it.
Oh.
Like it was just on one setting.
Yeah.
And I like to look down and see the least amount of pedals as possible.
Yeah, it's condensing every time I see you. It's...
But I live and die by the Holy Grail. That's like that and a blues driver. I don't know why I have this other crap, but it's awesome. Now the head and combo, we just recorded the whole new album. I was using a Marshall Super Bass with like I think this exact cab.
Oh wow.
That one had G12H30s. This one has greenbacks. This is a rented cab, so I couldn't be too picky, but I love that check. It's the 1960 BX Marshall cab with the greenbacks. And, this orange 8030 head, I don't even think they make anymore. And they're not even like a super popular orange head cause they don't do metal, but they do blues and like our kind of stuff really well is what I'm finding. I traded, with, one of my friends named Sean, in my hometown, I traded him a head for this plus cash. And I just had been playing it and playing it. And I was like, dude, this thing is really, really good sounding. And I chickened out a couple times bringing it out and just committed. And it's only 30 watts.
Okay.
I just run channel one. I think Jimmy Page in like 2007 when Led Zeppelin was doing stuff, he had just the channel one single channel version of the 8030. So I mean if he was using it, you know, that's good enough for me. But no complaints. I've got a lot of compliments on it actually
from, it sounded great
from
last
like
night.
Close friends and stuff who I trust their opinion. Everyone's like, dude, it sounds awesome.
No, man, you've gone through a lot of amps, both me seeing you guys live but then also on the rundown. So what are you after when you're chasing an amp sound? Because I know that you're relying a lot because you don't have many pedals.
I mean, I'm setting this amp. It's just clean, you know, it's a clean platform. I'm not driving it at all. But what I'm looking for
is... Why that? Because this is obviously clean too.
Yeah.
A lot of headroom.
That's not going to give me natural compression at the lower level that I want. I mean, this is still really loud, but this is EL84s, which to me are, they compress even when they're clean. And it just holds notes longer. It's easier to play.
Mm.
Like on this, it's like, even with a blues driver or fuzz, it doesn't sustain as well as something that with a clean platform that compresses naturally. And I don't want to use a compressor pedal.
Yeah.
Like I want the amp to be like working a little bit, but still stay clean. And this has been doing it for me.
Have you ever messed with an AC30 kind of its
cousin? So this is like, I guess this would be the closest thing to an AC-30. 84s. Yeah, EL-84s. It's got four of them. And it's great. I mean, it sounds awesome.
Now, getting into the pedals a little bit, I got to ask, because you are a master of not only the tone, but also the volume knobs on your guitars.
Oh, yeah.
Why have both the foot pedal and your guitar, because you're using it all throughout the night.
Yeah. This is still, 100% or 90% of the time, I do a couple volume swells on slide on like Talisman, but the Lely volume pedal is just so I can mute it and have the poly, because I'm running a out to the polytune, and I want to be able to see the tuner, and when the volume is on, be able to hit a low C while I'm playing live and make sure that it's in tune.
Yeah.
And for me, that's the only way that I've figured it out how to do it. You know, I can still see it, that it's flat.
Now, getting back to the volume on the guitar, are you kind of like Billy Gibbons in a sense where you're like riding, let's say, rhythm, non-solo part 7?
Yeah.
And then when you need to bring in the heavy solo stuff, you go to 10 on the guitar?
Exactly. So this is all like sound. The volume pedal is just functional.
Got it.
And it's a faster way to just mute it. This is going to be, like, for instance, Blues Driver on. I'm still getting used to this. So here's, volume down a little bit.
She wakes up with it, just a little Blues Driver,
And then my, wah, obviously everybody knows that. This Wham Copycat boost, these are like...
It's a new friend.
Yeah, we had a couple of people from the Canadian branch of Hi-Watt drop us off a couple pedals at our show in Toronto on this tour. And I told you on the new record I'd been using the Beano boost into a Marshall super bass. Well, I'm kind of treating the Blues Driver as like my super bass, just an overdrive sound. But when I need more out of it, like on something metal, so here's like normal.
So good.
Yeah. And then
the chunk is work.
Yeah, it's these are the settings, like you can boost all the low frequencies, but I'm treating it like that treble booster. Dialing back all the low frequencies into the Blues Driver. And
tell me about the Blues Driver, because that's the one that's been on the board since the first one, but it looks like there's a little update.
Yeah, this is I'm pretty sure it's the same one since like the first one, but after using the Beano boost in the studio, I was so stoked on it, I just sent Mike from Analog Man just a nice email.
You guys are on first name basis?
Yeah. I was just like, yeah, dude, like, you made such an awesome thing with this Beano boost. I'm extremely late to the game with it. I just wanted to say, how much I'm enjoying it. I bought one off of, the used market, and just wanted to reach out and tell you how much I loved it.
Yeah.
And then he was like, I know you. I see that you are a Blues Driver guy. Send me your Blues Driver and I'll mod it. And I was like, done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's really hard to go back to the stock one. I know that I've been like a stock.
You're a stock snob.
I'm a stock snob. Yeah. So, but after hearing the difference, it's got more gain. It has a little bit less output.
Okay.
So, you got to turn the level up a little bit. But it has more gain, which is always good for me because I get worse and worse as I get older. So, I need more distortion out of the guitar. It's just easier to play. And... What it sounds good. It's like maybe a little bit more scooped, which is fine with me.
Yeah. What do you dig about the Blues Driver? Has it been something that you, once you found it, you were good with it?
This is what I dig about it. Okay.
Or have you still always try to have it beat another pedal? Or once you got it, you just left it, and you're just like, okay, I got that problem solved.
It's the only overdrive pedal that does this. So not only does it clean up, but it keeps the compression.
Yeah.
When you clean up, like other overdrive pedals that are good, they just sound muddy to me whenever you turn them up. I don't know how they do it. I was talking to somebody and he was saying how insane the design is of the Blues Driver.
Huh.
But yeah, so, you know, it's great. And then I have this, the Silverfish.
Yeah, another stomp on her foot. Last time we were, it was a different one you had.
Yeah, I had mine, which was the Scatola Nera. And then after that, I had another one, which was the Bucket of Blood. And none of them sounded as good as the one that Matt made for Sean.
Huh.
So I was like,
funny how that worked out.
Sound wins, yeah, and I was extremely pissed off about it. But I was like, well, I'll just use his. But yeah, this is, you know.
I know that we want to save the nuggets for a different conversation, but you played a song last night. This was like, is this like off Dope Smoker? Because like new song, if it's right from Setlist FM, is like, hold up, what's that?
Oh, well, the Dope Smoker one is Red Rocking Chair.
Okay. Which is... Silverfish,
That Silverfish with the copycat boost, and then of course the Silverfish has the Octavia for
one by one sound.
Yeah,
because like I was, you played that last night, and I'm like, what is going on there? I'm like, is that Alan? Is that Ben?
Yep. And then together, they make.
Is there any point specific that both get put on?
One by one.
Okay.
Yeah.
For like the solo or like the on chunkier the, parts?
On the verses.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the last pedal I have is...
You got two delays. You got the
Yeah. This is just a 400 millisecond analog delay when I want there to be sustain, you know.
So beat out the DD5. You had that DD5 forever.
Yeah, and I honestly wish I had it on this tour.
Sorry to bring up a sore subject.
Yeah, but I have the Timeline, which is doing a couple different things. It's acting kind of as like four pedals in one. So I have like a couple different subdivisions, like a dotted eighth for Alabaster. I have, it's acting as a chorus pedal as well. And then for, I have a quarter note for Bulls. It's just this pre-programmed. Kind of like U2 Edge thing, which Russian Circles guitar player is also a fan of the Edge.
Yeah.
I am too. Cheers. And then this, it's also a spring reverb. I do that as well. And then for Red Rocking Chair, one of the new songs that's going to be coming out, it's a vibrato. Pretty sweet. And then this is for in-between songs, so there's no blank noise. Yeah, so
what about for a diamond?
Diamond is, so I actually have a patch for that. It's just,
you played that one last night.
Yeah, it starts. So that's just the timeline acting as a chorus pedal, and then it goes to a... kind of dotted eight thing. So that's going to be hard to get rid of, which I'll most likely... I like to try different stuff all the time.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, before I let you go and talk to the other guys,
absolutely.
Because you got to, you know, you get to do this with the King Buffalo guys, and you get to go on stage with them, does it ever enter your mind to have a two-guitar band? Because it sounds like, it looked like you guys are having fun.
I'm way too much of a ball hog.
Because the last night you guys were having fun.
Yeah.
And I just was thinking in the moment, I'm like, I wonder if Ben's ever thought about having a second guitar player.
With witches, hell no. But would I go out with King Buffalo for a tour? Hell yes.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, I thank you so much for talking to the other guys.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you.
If you've played guitar for long enough, you're going to hear the name D'Addario. That's because they make some of the best strings on the planet, but they also make accessories.
Backline gear transport bags. We're not only just fans of the stuff, we actually use it. Perry, what do we got there?
This is the big dog. We got the Solo, which is a little bit smaller. They're both fully customizable. Normally, you would put your modeler in here, all your cables, pedals, anything that you need to play a show.
Strings.
We have ours loaded down with camera lenses, cameras, stills cameras, our wireless systems, everything that we need to bring you guys great rig rundowns.
And when we go to NAMM, also has a laptop slot. And what's the best part, Perry?
Oh, man. My favorite part?
Bottle opener.
They've thought of everything.
Yeah, dude. Back to rig rundown. All right. We are joined now by Parks. Parks, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. Hey, sorry.
Can you bring up the energy a little bit?
Yeah. Hey, I'm doing great. Glad to be alive.
Yeah. Night two, Brooklyn Bowl, back in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
What's that feel like? Because you guys had this as a home for a long time.
Yeah, I've never been to this venue, honestly. So last night was the first one. They're all, you know, venues are funny. They're all kind of the same and they're all kind of different.
But, okay.
Glad to be back in town, see some friends. And it's always kind of fun to not strike your stuff at the end of the night and then just come back to it the next day.
Yeah. So. What did you think of the bowling?
I didn't bowl.
Because there were people bowling last night. I was here.
I couldn't hear them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea. Except for when the guy passed out. I heard that there was a funny moment when somebody was just like...
Killing time. Through a set.
When everybody was quiet. Waiting, making sure that the guy was like, okay. But somebody's like, well, fuck it. I guess I'll just do one. So
I got an open spare.
Yeah.
But it was a unique night last night. Not just being a homecoming show for you guys in night one. But it was also, King Buffalo was... I was telling Perry, like, they're just starting to kind of get up to... flying level, cruising altitude, and PA just shuts down. And then we had a pass out during Diamond. So that was I can't say that I've ever been in a situation where those two things have happened in one show.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I've never been in a venue where the elevator smoke alarm gets set off by the haze. So that's kind of what happened here.
Because that what triggered everything?
Yeah, it kills the power to the front of the stage. And so all their pedal boards.
The dominoes started falling.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have people pass out all the time, but usually it's like, hey, make sure he gets out there okay. And we stop and make sure that they're not getting trampled.
And you had a good PSA, you know?
Yeah.
If you need help, just ask for it.
Yeah, just don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah.
In all aspects of your life. You should ask for help.
Absolutely. And I should do that more myself. Ask my wife. Getting into gear, though, because that's why they're here. They're not here to me talk. They want to hear you talk about your gear and the Doom Broom.
The Doom Broom. She's here.
Now, can you tell us a succinct story? Because obviously this has been covered in the previous two rundowns, but... tell people that haven't been, acquainted to this unique instrument. And it's copy. This is the copy, right?
This is the copy.
Okay.
Yeah, the original is a 72 Rickenbacker 4001. I had Derek Ness over at Eastside Music Supply make this for me. I don't know how many years ago now, and it has definitely taken a beating. It's starting to get chewed out from my nails and playing. And this guitar was almost pink when I got it. And so it's patinaed really well.
Wow.
Here's my thumb grooves. It takes a beating. I'm sorry to all the instruments I own. Like, they really take some shit.
So the original one was like flipped, right? It was a left-handed one?
No, it's a righty somebody turned into a lefty, turned back into a righty.
Okay,
and that's the confusing part. So because the horns are gone and the headstock was chopped, it's like, what kind of guitar is that and why?
Yeah.
So don't at me about it. So this is the copy. Been going strong. This has been my main bass ever since he made it. And...
Do you ever mess around? I know that last one we did at the Ryman, you had your dad's bass with you, mm-hmm. the P-Bass. Do you mess with other basses in the context of All Them Witches, or is it kind of this is it, the Doom Broom and Doom Broom 2?
I have quite a few more basses than I had the first time we talked.
Okay.
And I don't remember which of my dad's P-Basses I had at the Ryman.
It was an old one that had a groove in it, too. I want to say it wasn't as bad as we would have run down with Bouncing Souls, and that guy had like a crater in his
right,
bass.
Right.
But I want to say it was what, like
a 60s? Black pick card?
Yeah.
Okay, so that was the original Witch's bass, or the bass that I had when we started this band.
Okay.
That's like a 72 Schecter or something before they were even a company.
Okay.
So I think that whoever Papa Schecter was made it himself. And it's awesome. I had that out on the last tour, but it needs a little love. So I actually have one of my other dad's, one of my dad's
other
basses, which is also a P bass, which we can pull out and look at, which is totally unique.
It's, oh, cool.
Yeah, I've never seen another one like this.
Well, with that introduction, let's see it.
Let's see it. This is a 62 or 63 P bass.
Looks all original.
yeah, P bass, jazz bass hybrid here. Again, these are my dad's thumb marks, which is funny how that kind of crosses over the boundaries there through yeah. generations. His friends put this together in the 60s or 70s from Frankenstein parts, I think, and has these little switches that this one has been broken since the day he got it from him. So it never got fixed. You can flip these out of phase. You can. It's like a mute switch as well. You go from huge bass sound to like radio squeakiness. Yeah, you would hear it. So, all down. Right. That is slightly more bassy. And then.
Wow.
Just goes, just disappears.
Now with All Them Witches, are you playing with your fingers all like kind of exclusively?
No, I switch sometimes in the middle of songs to picks.
Okay.
These are
big triangles.
Yeah, big triangles. 73, I think. Yeah, these are Dunlops with my custom little symbol on there, which just matches one of my tattoos.
Wow.
So yeah, and I can't seem to get rid of them. I find them all over my house, everywhere, in shoes, in my wife's purse. She's like, how did this get here? I have no idea. And he gave me like a couple thousand of them. So I'm still working.
Lifetime
through.
Supply.
I don't know about lifetime, but it is a lot because I keep finding more. So
now, when does this old 60s come out? Is it just backup or is there certain songs maybe?
This is for anything that's in standard, standard, and as a backup. I had a string break on the last tour in Europe on the bass, which was a total shit show that never happens.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can probably count on, you know, it may be like 10 times in my life have I broken a bass string or something.
Wow.
But it happened just at the right moment. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I have a backup bass. Got it. And I was like, oh, it's in standard. And then you're trying to do the math and where you're supposed to be and what you can do. And the whole song was ruined.
Yeah, thinking and playing doesn't work.
Yeah, and it just kind of fell apart. So I brought this and I made sure to get a pitchfork. So whatever happens, I can at least get it to where it needs to be.
Yeah, in the ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's this or the other way around, if like this breaks a string and I have to do stuff in E, you can just pitchfork it up or down. And
it's a good safety net.
Yeah, and it keeps me from bringing five guitars on the road.
Yeah.
So Ben sent me a song list before this tour. I was like, I'm gonna have to bring five, like a bass six, and like, you know, all of these other things to pull off these songs. I was like, no, you spend $90 on a pedal, and it solves a lot of those problems.
How do you guys choose a set list? Because you guys do vary it from night to night.
We vary it from night to night. We'll have like a pretty rough idea tour to tour of what we can and can't do, what works and doesn't. Sometimes it's really strange how refreshing an old song can feel when you're sick to death of playing it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, it's different every night. And sometimes it's very exciting for us and the crew because sometimes it changes mid-set. So
You're calling audibles?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, if something's going wrong and the set isn't going to work out the way it was supposed to, Ben will call Hail Mary and we'll
follow.
He's usually like he comes up with a set list and is more like band leader on his side of the stage if something goes wrong.
Gotcha.
Calls the shots.
You just go with the flow guy.
I gotta think about too much shit to do that.
Yeah, you're singing.
Yeah, singing, bass playing.
Dancing.
Dancing, trying. I never really got good at dancing. I've always been on stage, so, yep.
Well, should we get the Doom Broom back? Or maybe introduce the guitar quick?
The guitar.
You busted that out last night. That's typically for Dying Surfer stuff?
Yeah, Dying Surfer stuff, or like Children of Coyote Woman. Okay. Like, yeah, anything where I play guitar on it.
Got it. Now, is this from one of your other dads?
This is my third dad. No, actually, I bought this maybe last year or the year before. I've wanted one of these since I was 14. You know, I've been kind of searching for one forever.
What made the appeal? Because that's such an unusual guitar for a teenager to
lust after. I don't know. I like hollow bodies. I'm mainly an acoustic player at home. I play like a classical guitar. Like 99% of my music time is on just like a classical guitar. Because sitting home playing bass by yourself sucks.
Yeah.
So this kind of filled in a lot of the gaps. I was able to use my amps with it. And I really just love how it feels. And how it sounds. It's got its own unique thing. And I always like these kind of like Barney Kessel style double cut hollow bodies.
I like the sharp angles on the horns.
The sharp angles. I like that it didn't have a bar when I got it because my SG doesn't have a bar, and I never liked them anyways, so I always just do like palm stuff.
Real quick, you the Sovtek's kind of been in the equation for a long time.
Yes.
The big guy. And the little brother's just for guitar, right?
Yeah, and I just picked that up at the beginning of this tour. It was actually in the town that Ben and Christian live.
Okay.
And I saw it on Reverb. I was like, hey, why don't you just go over there and swing me this Sovtek? So, I forgot that I had that during the first rig rundown. So the 100H just came out of retirement, and this is the first time it's been on the road in years. And that one is brand new. So it's basically like a 59 Bassman clone.
Okay.
It is the bass of... The name is a little tacky now, bass off Blues Midget. I think that's kind of not PC these days, but that is what Mike Matthew decided to call it back in the 90s. And the dad and the baby there.
Yeah, I love it.
Single 12 custom cab. I don't know who made that, but it's got a cream back in it, and that's just kind of the...
And when you bought it, it came together, or did you buy separate?
No. I had the speaker... separate.
Okay.
I've had that one for a few years now, but and all of the plastic things need to be replaced.
Oh,
and
I bet.
They're all cracked and broken and lost. So Sovteks, they take a little bit of work, but I've never had that thing let me down, ever.
Watch tonight.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said that, but I kind of got that as like, if that goes down, that is a backup for that, and then I have the Milkman to back up the guitar amp if even necessary to like go through the stress of setting me up a guitar amp in the middle of a show. It would never happen, but it is a backup, so.
Well, let's hear this.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, Talisman's dope. Simple, you know? Simple, loud, clean.
Hell yeah. Well, let's get the Doom Broom clone out and kind of walk through a little bit more of what you got on the floor here.
Surely.
So what do we got down here?
What we're working with is we got this Shure tuner, which is also wireless, which, depending on the venue, whether the RF works or not, you know, not that this one had it, but I've been just using a cable the past couple of shows. So into the Shure, into the Hum Debugger, which has become really valuable on this run, especially with the old K. Mm. And you get in the middle of Chicago and there's so much frequencies flying around and cell phones and whatever, this thing came in spades.
Between wireless and cable, do you hear anything different, like on stage?
Me personally, no. Yeah. I think I'm deaf. I can't hear tone or anything anymore. So if it's this ear, maybe not, but maybe with this ear if I was focusing.
Well, carry on as I interrupted, though.
No, it's cool. Which I also think is really weird to talk about this one button, like not do anything kind of pedal, but the science behind it is really cool because I haven't found any other ones that do that. where it takes a mirror image of your AC 50 cycle thing and then inverts it and cancels the sound, like where everything else is just a limiter or a shelf or whatever. Like that one actually just phase cancels the noise.
So Mike Matthews, hell of a designer, maybe not the best at marketing.
Yeah, I guess so. I always joke that they're like the Jeeps of the guitar world. They're like, they look cool, they do cool stuff, but they inevitably just break.
Yeah.
So not to like, whatever, you know.
But they're resilient, and there's a reason why they've been around for 50 plus years.
Sure. I mean, the Sovtechs are a big, like, hey, they did something really right with that while cutting a few corners. Like, that's my favorite kind of amps. So, okay, from the Hum Debugger goes into just a Boss EQ, like, what is that, a 12 band, 10 band or something, just for guitar. Take a notch out of the 100 and kind of spruce it up a little bit, and goes into the Amp Tweaker Tight Fuzz, which I've had for a long time. I pretty much leave it on all the time, more as a preamp, and has its own little compressor circuit in there and a clean boost. So that's cool, and I run all of my dirty stuff through the effects loop of the Tight Fuzz.
Okay.
So it's kind of in its own little signal.
Can we hear that a little bit? Like, especially in more of the gnarly setting?
So if that's just with it on, with it off, kind of thumps it. And then I've always had this little Samson Greer amps. I don't think they make them anymore. I try to buy them whenever I see them because they're hard to find. Basically just like a Marshall in a box. So just a basic,
that hits it.
Yeah, I mean, I really like it. And I gave my other one, I think I traded a pedal to Ben. He uses it in a studio all the time. He says that everybody wants to use that pedal. So love that. High Watt, like he said, High Watt Canada just gave us a couple new toys. So this is their, I don't even know the name of this fuzz pedal, a filter fuzz, but it's pretty cool too. So if this is that, this is that. So, not too different, but the sustain holds more. It kind of cuts through a little bit more. It's punchier, and digging it. I took my MXR
like a Micro Ryan, maybe? Oh, okay.
Off of there. The purple one has been kind of running in tandem with this for a couple of years, and just gave that a try recently. I like it.
Nice. And how are you using the echo shifter? Is that more for guitar, or are you using it with bass?
I use it for bass for songs like Death, whenever you're just kind of a simple thing, or I like to play with it on stage a lot. Love the echo shifter. Never could find a use for it until a couple tours ago. I was like, oh, I'm just going to put it on here so I can fuck around at sound check. But
here it is.
Yep, still there. Great. Echo shifter. That's last in line, I think.
All right.
So, Tight Fuzz, all of my fuzz stuff, and then, actually it might be the echo shifter is next. But then just like a, what is that called? 30 millisecond double tracker, just for like some reverb, and a little bit of wiggle. Kind of hear it in there. So that's sweet. And it has like the Abbey Road reverb setting, which I use for guitar sometimes. Pitchfork, I talked about earlier, is just basically a safety net. In case anything goes wrong, I can turn my guitar into any other guitar with that pedal, which is great. And then, out at the echo shifter and into the splitter, to the two amps, and that's it. Yeah. I have like more pedals than he does, and all of his stuff does way more stuff than mine. than mine will, but I'm pretty much just an on-off guy. I just do this all night long, and that's kind of it. Either one of these, and maybe just a little bit of tone shaping at the beginning of a song, but I don't really fuck with pedals like throughout songs.
Yeah. You just kind of set it, forget it.
Distortion, no distortion.
Loud, like, quiet.
Yeah, that's it.
You mentioned it real quick. I wanted to pick your ear because I didn't get to do that at the Ryman. Was the Abbey Road setting on that 30 millisecond? Mm-hmm. Double tracker. What was it like recording the last record? at Abbey Road?
It is, it's crazy. Like, you think it might be like Disneyland or something when you go, and we didn't want that. We wanted it to be like a cool experience. And honestly, it's maybe one of my favorite recording experiences
really?
To have had. The people that worked there were so nice. Everything was really set up. It was a total working studio. You're using stuff that I ended up using, like the mic that I used for my vocal takes and stuff was like, I shot it out against a bunch of other mics, and it was like the same one that McCartney picked when he shot out mics, and Elliott Smith when he shot out mics. And it's just cool because those cycles just keep happening through music and throughout history.
Yeah.
And yeah, total working studio. Would love to do it again. Honestly, super chill. And you bring up the reverb on the board, and you're like, wow, that sounds just like Pink Floyd. And it's like, obviously it does. It's because it's the same plates. And
yeah, how fast did it wear off that you were in that kind of hallowed ground, you know?
Almost immediately.
To get to business.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's pictures all over the wall. You're like standing in a spot that Mick Jagger is standing, like in a picture right next to you. And that, it wears off. The formality wears off. And when you realize that, oh no, you paid for this room and you get to do whatever you want here. But obviously like the sacredness of the space lingers, and I don't know. Yeah, it's cool. I think they just want you to treat it how you're going to use it.
Yeah.
So, it was easy to be comfortable there.
Awesome. Well, Parks, I always enjoy talking with you, and I'm going to enjoy talking with Alan next.
All right.
Thank you so much, sir.
See you.
Now we're joined by Alan. We're going to include keys, folks. This is fun, and Alan has a lot working on, especially guitar pedals. So, Alan, talk to me about your keys and then kind of go through the pedals and what you're using.
Yeah, of course. So this is Fender Rhodes. The Fender goes into the Fender Twin.
Good matchup.
Yep. And the pedals that I use are all sitting on top of the Nord. It just works best this way for packing up and tearing down. But I think we've done one of these before.
Yeah.
And some of the things have stayed the same, but some of the things are new. So the first thing I do out of the output of the piano here, I go right into this Echoplex preamp.
Okay.
Boosts my signal a little bit.
Yeah, you're up there about 7.
Yeah, the output of the Fender Rhodes is a lot lower than like a typical guitar,
okay.
So it helps to hit these pedals with a little preamp in front, especially for like the delays I've found. But all the pedals behave a little differently than they would for a guitar, so I just kind of do trial and error. And
yeah,
this one's sticking around. I've messed around with some other preamps, but I do like that one a lot.
Yeah, what do you look for like in the pedals when it comes to, like, obviously you want it to play nicely with the keys and the sounds,
mm-hmm.
but what are you actually looking for?
Well, for the first one, I want like high input impedance,
okay.
so that I don't really lose the tone from this. And then, well, the grit is an important thing for me. Like this one just joined the board. This is actually one of my favorite pedals. It's a Donner Hexadrive.
That's, wow.
Yeah, take that, all you gearheads. this one, I mean, it's just usable in all of the ranges of the knobs for the Rhodes. Like, I can turn the tone up. It's got a mid boost. It's a lot like a Tube Screamer.
Huh.
But yeah, so when I roll the drive off, I've got a usable sound. When I turn the drive up, still very usable. And same with the tone and the boost. Like, I've been really happy with that pedal for whatever I paid, $20.
Yeah, did you know what you were getting, or is it just kind of like, whatever,
no.
$20 is $20. I can.
Like I was saying, trial and error, and I found it. I was like, $20, I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
So I used this in Europe, and it's stuck around. Probably will stick around for the next tour as
nice.
Well. The next one I go into is this Fender Pugilist distortion pedal.
Oh.
I used to have a Strymon Sunset. This is a really similar idea. I just wanted to switch it up a little bit to see how it goes. But yeah, basically you've got two different channels of different types of distortion.
Okay.
So, you know, side A and side B, and then you can either put them in series or blend them together like a parallel sound. That's what I'm doing. And it really can, you know, melt your face up at higher gain settings. off the tone is kind of important for the Rhodes. At least for me, I like that little darker sound.
Yeah.
And then when I stack them on top of each other, I can almost get some feedback from the pickups in here. Nope, maybe not. You just have to take my word for it. I promise it happens when we're playing. So I have to watch out for that. But yeah, I've been happy with this Fender. Kind of matches everything else I've got, I guess. So also, $50. Gave it a shot.
Yeah.
I like it.
You sound like you have the most pedals out of the band, I'm guessing.
I think so.
Because you're a trial and error guy.
Yep, but I also have this like multi-instrument setup. So yeah, I do like to try new things and probably have too many, but this Canyon here I added, I've got like extra space here. So sometimes I'll just switch this pedal out, but right now it's making some like shimmery sounds for me. Sometimes some glitchy sounds too.
Yeah, because you're active up here. Like you're turning knobs.
Yeah, that's what I do. I turn knobs and I
play keys.
this one, these two have been here since like day one. I go into the carbon copy after this side. I go into this MXR carbon copy. It's pretty much always on with the mod setting on.
Okay.
Gives me just a little bit of movement, and I've just grown accustomed to it, and it stays on pretty much all the time. Gentle movement in the background. Just something subtle.
Yeah.
And then this MF delay I use for pitch bends, because, you know, sometimes I like to pitch bend because Ben can do it, and yeah, I want to do it too, so it kind of sounds like this. So, yeah.
Sorry to cut you off, but Alan, is that I love when you guys do like a call and response between you and Ben.
Yeah.
And you guys can kind of get into each other's world with his pedals, you can kind of get synthy, and then you obviously can get guitar-y with yours.
Yeah, I guess I aim for guitar sounds out of the piano.
What do you try to do knowing that you got to compete with Parks and Ben specifically on guitar? Like, what are you trying to do in terms of like your sonic space? Where do you want to sit?
There's so much low mid range, and that's just like where I sit. But I try to roll off the bass boost on the tone rail here of the Rhodes, and honestly, I think they handle the rest at front of house. You know, I have a DI, this Neve DI that I go into that gives him a little more control and clarity at the front of house. But I think it's a challenge just with all the low mid range that we have in the band.
Yeah.
I, you know, just do my thing and I let everybody else deal with it. that's my MO these days.
Nice. Now, does the Norgate use it all, or is it literally just?
Of course, yeah. I use this station for the organ sounds. It's actually DI only right now. I don't have it coming out of the amp, but it's just organ. And then if there's a catastrophic failure with the Rhodes, I can make Rhodes sounds on here as well.
Yeah.
Synth sounds, sampling, whatever. But mainly the organ. That's what I'm using it for.
And I know that you have a Git fiddle over there, right?
Yeah. This is the electric violin, Yamaha 5-string. It's, you know, pretty affordable as far as electric violins go. Don't need anything fancy. I only play it a few times during the set, but you know, it goes through its own little signal chain here, a carbon copy, a JHS basic reverb,
okay,
a pitchfork, and then like an OD-250. But then the real special thing, I think, is the wah coupled with the overdrive. It's I'll just show you.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I just love the sound of a wah on the violin. And Ben gets one, so I want one.
Were you classically trained in violin, or is it something you just applied to the band feeling you could do something with it?
I grew up playing the violin. That was my first instrument.
Okay.
And I don't know. I just kind of started breaking it out because I was like getting bored playing the piano all the time, and it's something I can do, so finding places to fit it in has been fun.
Yeah, I saw you guys, I mentioned it earlier, so people are getting sick of it, but I was here last night, night one, and you and Ben kind of going back and forth with the...
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll find more ways to work that in the future. just back and forth with the violin.
And it was cool too because it reminded me of I don't know if you're familiar with the band Murder by Death.
Yes, yeah.
Defunct now, R.I.P.
It was one of the first shows that I ever saw was Murder by Death.
Yeah,
in Columbus, Ohio.
I know she plays a cello, but whatever you were doing kind of reminded me on one of those sections. It wasn't the part where you were going back and forth with Ben, but later in the set where it sounded so dark and ominous.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of seeing Murder by Death.
Yeah.
Like obviously violin, electric violin versus a cello, but you were approximating it with the pedals and it was cool.
Yeah, it can sound a lot like a guitar. You know, the signal's very similar. It's just, you know, a pickup. I have, you know, the Apera acoustic DI that really helps with this pickup, but pickup, guitar pedals, amp,
yeah.
It ends up sounding a lot like a guitar.
Well, Alan, thank you for joining us again, and I really appreciate and I love that you're back with the band, because like you bring a dimension to the band that it was missing, and I'm glad that you're back in full flight with the band.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, well, thank you again. Thanks to Ben and Parks, and now you guys keep watching Rig Rundowns.